Fasten your seatbelt, turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Welcome to Route 51, regional talk radio for North Central Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Mobrick. This week, the DNR is holding deer management information meetings across North Central Wisconsin, with those annual Conservation Congress meetings scheduled next month. At those meetings, hunters are voicing their anger over a disappointing gun deer season last fall. In Marathon County, the total harvest was down 37%, and DNR estimates show the herd size well below the agency's targets. Meanwhile, other big game animals are in the news. The state's bear population now estimated at over 33,000 animals. That's almost three times the initial estimates. And the bears are moving south. Then there are wolves. 2009 was the sixth consecutive year that the state's wolf population exceeded the DNR goal of 350 animals. And with a current population of at least 650 wolves in Wisconsin, there are calls for a hunting season to keep the animals in check. And finally, last but not least, there are cougars, with the DNR acknowledging for the first time that mountain lions have been sighted in Wisconsin. Our guest today, Tim Van Dielen, professor of wildlife ecology at UW-Madison and an expert on the state's deer, bear, and wolf population. And also Eric Anderson, a professor of wildlife ecology at UW-Stevens Point, who has spent several years tracking reports of the elusive cougar in our state. We will be joined later in the program by Adrian Wideven, mammalian ecologist with the Wisconsin DNR and one of the state's top wolf experts. Now, as always, we want to hear from you, whether you are a hunter concerned about the deer herd, an environmentalist in favor of maintaining a strong wolf population in the state, a homeowner concerned about the number of bears in Wisconsin, maybe some in your neighborhood, or especially if you're one of the few lucky ones who've seen a mountain lion or a cougar in Wisconsin, please join our conversation. Our lines are wide open right now at 261-6371 if you're in the Wausau area. That's 261-6371, or anywhere you're listening at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Eric Anderson, thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, absolutely, Glenn. Glad to be here.
And Tim Van Dielen, thank you for joining us by telephone at UW-Madison.
Well, thank you for the invitation.
We're going to start out with a tape, a story that we did 3 weeks ago. A team of UW researchers and DNR officials, including Director Matt Frank, led a makeshift expedition into a Marathon County forest area to put a new tracking collar on a hibernating female bear. The bear was nursing four cubs. The purpose was to get better information on how the state's expanding bear population is moving south and expanding its range. Here's that story as it was heard initially on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Hey, Tim, how are you doing?
Good.
DNR Secretary Matt Frank greets the dozen or so people at a Marathon County trailhead, happy to be out of the office.
One of the best parts of the job, just getting out and seeing what everybody's working on.
What everybody's working on is replacing the radio collar on a 12-year-old female black bear that's hibernating about a mile into the woods. It's part of a study headed by Dave McFarlane, research scientist with the DNR.
For the last 20 years, we've had bears moving progressively further south. What are the movement corridors? What are the likely barriers?
McFarlane's research has shown that the bears are not only on the move, there are more of them. UW-Madison wildlife ecologist Tim Van Dielen says the numbers are much higher than earlier estimates.
When he predicted there were 25 or 30,000 bears, the DNR number was closer to 12 or 15,000.
The hibernating mother is at the southern edge of the state's recognized bear habitat. She was discovered 2 years ago by local hunter Terry Lane.
I was out here rabbit hunting one day and I heard something squealing, making a noise like a puppy. It turned out to be a bear, and then I knew there must have been a newborn in there.
2 years later, the bear is back and is once again a mother, nursing four newborn cubs. Anesthesiologist Joe Bodavis prepares the tranquilizer.
We'll actually use a pole that's about 6 feet long, and we'll attach a syringe to it.
The makeshift group of scientists, hunters, and volunteers trudges through high snow into a clear-cut region of the forest, led by UW-Madison researcher Carl Malcolm.
Those young clear-cuts are great denning places.
The party pushes through the spindly growth to the den where the groggy mother lays with her four cubs. Bodavis plunges the syringe into her side, and soon she's asleep. The tiny cubs are pulled away and handed one at a time to the volunteers. They look like cuddly teddy bears. They sound like banshees. DNR Secretary Matt Frank takes two of the frightened cubs and holds them close inside his jacket to calm them down.
Oh, this is what it's all about. How fantastic it is that we have a state where we have a wild bear population like this that is thriving and that we're learning more about through these kind of research efforts.
You ever held two bear cubs like this out in the wild before?
This is a first, and I got to tell you, it's a thrill. It's an absolute thrill.
In the den, as Bo Davis shaves the bear's neck and adjusts the new collar, Malcolm tries to extract some milk from the lactating mother.
I told him I'd give it a whirl, but I'd never milked a bear before.
A request from other scientists working on a global study of bear biology.
They're really interested in trying to get some milk samples, not just from American black bears, but in fact from as many species of black bears as they could.
How do you milk a bear?
Well, I'm not quite sure. I gave it a try today, and apparently those four cubs that she has, they look really healthy and they look really plump, and that's for a reason.
With a new collar on Mama Bear and the cubs returned to her side, everyone makes a quick exit as the anesthetic wears off. Malcolm and Secretary Frank praise the cooperation between scientists and hunters that made it all possible.
They're not just out there to shoot animals. Nobody cares about these resources more than the people who are out enjoying them, and hunters are at the top of that list.
It's just great to see how this work all comes together on the ground on a day like today.
As for the four cubs, next year they'll be fitted with radio collars to help the team figure out where the state's bear population is moving and how fast. In Marathon County, I'm Glenn Mobert for Wisconsin Public Radio News. And if you just joined us, this is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We're talking about the status of bears in Wisconsin, a vastly higher number of them than originally estimated. Also, the state's growing wolf population, cougars sighted in Wisconsin, and a dwindling deer herd. All topics for conversation today. You can join the conversation at 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. Our guests are wildlife ecologists Eric Anderson and Tim Van Dielen. Tim, his researchers led that expedition into the woods that I was privileged to be a part of. And Tim, those bear cubs are something else.
Yeah, they really are. They kind of sell the program.
Just amazing, the sound they made. You know, of course, there they are snuggling up next to Mom, and they weren't very happy at being pulled away.
No, but they're fun to hold. They're fun to see, and it's fun to interact with them that way.
Tim, how often is it that you'll find bears like this this mother bear who was just in a depression, right out in the open in the woods, not under a tree, not in a cave or a hollow, just sleeping there out in the open?
Well, I don't know the exact percentage, but it's relatively rare. Most of the time when bears are denning, they do have the sort of den that most people are thinking about, where they might dig their way in under a deadfall or under a pile of brush or something. But, you know, occasionally we get bears that sleep right out in the open. And, because they're more visible, they tend to get seen and reported. I think a few years ago we actually had a bear that was sleeping in an eagle's nest.
Wow. And this particular bear was significant, I guess, because it's kind of on the southern edge of the bear's normal range in our state?
Yeah, that's correct. It's kind of at that transition zone between the agriculture and the more northern forest, and that's where we're seeing an expanding bear population.
Now, this was your research team conducting this this experiment. Why were you putting the radio collar on the bear?
Well, understanding an expanding bear population can really be broken down into two components. You have to know the size and distribution of the source population, and then you have to understand how the individual bears, the ones that are responsible for most of the movement, you have to understand how they navigate the habitat at that leading edge of the expansion, so to speak.
And what are you finding out? Are there certain kinds of habitats that keep them from moving into other areas, moving further south, or what do they need in order to continue expanding their range? And is that even good?
Well, we don't really understand the barriers yet. the bears that navigate that forest and farm ag mix tend to, during the summertime, do most of their movement through wooded areas and along wooded streams and that sort of thing. And that's kind of what you'd expect. But when the crops are up and they're mature, a certain number of them are also willing to move through like a tall cornfield. They seem to like some concealment. But what we don't know is what's the break point? You know, as you decrease permanent cover and increase agricultural cover, where do they feel so uncomfortable that they decide not to try and strike out through that area? So that's kind of the thing that we're hoping to get at when we sit down and do the analysis.
Now, your team discovered that there were, I think the figure that I pulled up is 33,657 bears in Wisconsin. Now, that's compared to an initial estimate of 13,000 animals. How could the DNR have gotten those figures so wrong the first time around?
Well, I got to be careful here because this is like the old cliche about the fellow who has two watches. He really doesn't know what time it is. There was a lot of suspicion that the DNR estimate was low. And so when we went in to try and estimate it using a different independent technique, we came up with that 33,000 figure with error estimates that would range from about 28,000 to about 40,000. So there's a good deal of uncertainty with our estimate. There's probably a good deal of uncertainty with the DNR estimate. We think, or at least we've been working on an analysis which would suggest that if the bear population had been growing for a long time, that the way the DNR was estimating would be less likely to track that increase. But they're gearing up for another tetracycline-based population estimate, and that'll help confirm, hopefully, whether or not, you know, the bear population is actually that much higher, or if, you know, for some reason we may have overestimated it. Hopefully, kind of running the two techniques in tandem mm-hmm. for a while will give us a better idea of what the bear population is actually doing.
Eric Anderson, I'd like you to comment on the tape we just heard and the fact that these bear population estimates are so different than what we were told.
Yeah, I think it's pretty interesting. Carnivores in general are pretty tough to get population estimates on, and we're dealing with similar issues with the bobcats in the state. We model them to try to estimate how big the population is, but in terms of actually on-the-ground techniques for censusing them, we're not very good at that. It's a tough road to hoe. So we're experimenting with all sorts of things in the state relative to that, everything from erecting hair snares that collect little hair samples from animals as they pass by to actually using dogs to detect scats of various different carnivores and then estimating the population size from that kind of work.
You've spent a number of years tracking reports of cougars in Wisconsin, and it's just been within the last 2 years that the DNR has said, yes, there have been confirmed cougar sightings in our state. Did you feel that was overdue?
You never know when the evidence is actually going to accumulate to the point where it tips the balance, and we certainly have that at this point, not only photographs with the DNA evidence that we need. And one of the remarkable things has been with trail cameras spread out across Wisconsin now. We actually, just before January, had a cat move in from Minnesota, and we've actually been able to track it as it moves across the state and up into Ashland County area via people picking up photographs on their trail cameras.
That was initially in Dunn County in the far western part, and
correct,
apparently it crossed the frozen St. Croix River?
That's our guess. That's about the only way we can figure it would have happened, yeah.
All right. You had that sighting just last December, and it was only a year earlier in January of 2008 that cougar was confirmed in Milton, and at the time, big headlines, first confirmed cougar sighting in Wisconsin in 100 years. But there have been people, many of them calling this program, saying that, yes, we've seen cougars, we know they're out there, the DNR is ignoring the evidence.
I don't think there was ever any intention to ignore evidence, but if you think about it, if we in the last 2 years have had three DNA verified cougars that have come into the state, The chances are that prior to last year, we've had cougars coming through the state as well. We just haven't had the physical evidence of their presence here. So,
any idea how many of these animals are in Wisconsin?
At this exact moment in time?
Yeah.
I really couldn't tell you. Everything we've seen so far has been young males coming through. And although there's plenty of food here in terms of deer, which is their main food item, one of the main missing pieces are females. And until they happen upon a female in the wild, not too likely they're going to stay resident very long.
Right, so you don't think we have a breeding population?
I don't think so yet, but we'll see soon.
There have been reports up in Price County, other parts of the far north, of black panthers that have been seen. I even saw a newspaper photograph that looked darn real. It looked like, well, it looked like a Labrador with a very long tail.
Yes. Black panthers, there would be nothing native to Wisconsin that would be a black panther. They're called melanistic phases, and they occur in mountain lions occasionally, and there are panthers, but certainly not in the north. They're a tropical, subtropical strain.
Okay, we're talking to Eric Anderson. He's a wildlife ecologist and a cougar expert at UW-Stevens Point. Also, Tim Van Dielen, who has been leading some research into the growing bear population in Wisconsin. We're also talking about wolves and the declining deer population.
Support for WPR comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
We are looking at the population of deer, bears, cougars, wolves, and I think we'll probably be talking about coyotes and bobcats before we're done. We'd like to hear from you, 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to the phones. We have Jim in Wausau. Jim, you're on Route 51, Regional Talk Radio.
Hi, Glenn, and hello to your guest, and thanks for another great show. Long-time deer hunter, outdoorsman, photographer, hunted and fished and recreated outdoors in Michigan and the UP and Wisconsin for 40 years or so.
Sounds like you've had a great life.
It's a gift just to live here, except sometimes the winters get long, but not this winter. But I want to agree on a lot of the things I'm hearing and just give you another perspective from a hunter's nature appreciator's perspective. Have seen northern Wisconsin in particular from, let's say, the Newwood area north from Merrill North decrease overall in several areas that I hunt over in the northeast, the northwest, and in the north. In generally seeing the increase in predators, seeing more bears. Our party has seen wolves. I personally haven't seen them, but I've seen the tracks, the scat, and came across a wolf kill not too long ago. That was quite impressive.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't much of the deer left. And, of course, when you put all these facts together, I just wanted to say that I don't think, sports and laymen out there should try and point the finger at any one predator, including man. We're all part of it. It's the web of life, and all the predators are increasing, and the prey is decreasing for the most part right now, from my observations. And I'm hoping the cycle will swing back because, of course, in 40 years, I've seen it go from almost no deer to too many deer. Well, I won't ever say I personally felt there was too many deer, but I know a lot of people did.
Tim Van Dielen, if you could comment on what Jim just said.
Well, I'm enjoying what Jim said. Eric and I both are professors in the legacy of Aldo Leopold, who was a famous Wisconsinite, and his description of enjoying hunting but also enjoying a larger experience of, the other animals and the outdoor, the plants and that sort of thing, I'm just happy to hear him make those points.
Well, he's saying that it's a multifaceted issue. Now, Jim, are you talking just about predators, or are there other factors like maybe too many antlerless permits in previous years? Or we had a rough winter 3 years ago, 2007 to 2008. Do you think all of those factors might be involved?
Absolutely, Glenn. And I think, you know, everything you guys are saying is certainly accurate. And, you know, it's difficult to manage a population as diverse as deer in Wisconsin, and how many different places that we have and how many different mini populations and different impacts on those populations. But I do think that the sex-age-kill ratio, the formula that's currently used by the DNR, although it's touted as one of the best formulas, I think it, you know, this is a dynamic, constantly changing situation, and I think that needs to be updated.
All right.
I've got some friends who are in the DNR, and they're not wildlife folks. They're forestry folks. But they don't agree with the sex-age-kill ratio from a deer harvest perspective.
All right. Jim, thanks for the call. We've got a news break coming up in about 30 seconds. Tim, if you could comment very much, you know, very quickly on what Jim just said about what was it, the sex-age-kill ratio?
Right, the sex-age-kill is a mathematical model that we in Wisconsin use to estimate deer populations. And we, you know, we spent a lot of energy in 2005 with an audit of the SAK, and you know, it clearly has its shortcomings. It's very sensitive to changes in the harvest mortality, and, you know, the DNR deer people are well aware of the shortcomings,
okay,
and we're working to change them. So
we got a break for news. We're talking about deers, bears, cougars, and wolves in Wisconsin. We'll be back with more on
WPR comes
right after this.
A nonprofit economic development enterprise and a partner in Something Special from Wisconsin, featuring a variety of Wisconsin-based products, including Rushing Waters Fisheries of Palmyra. Info at somethingspecialfromwisconsin.com.
We're back on Route 51, Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. I'm Glenn Moberg. Our subject today is we look forward to the Conservation Congress meetings, which will be held across the state on April 12th. We are talking about the state's deer population, which is dwindling and below the target goals for the DNR, and also a bear population that is almost three times previous estimates. Cougars being seen in the state for the first time, at least their sightings being confirmed by the DNR, and we also have a wolf population that is almost twice what the DNR would like it to be. Our phone number is 261-6371, 1-800-780-9742. Our guests, Eric Anderson, a wildlife ecologist at UW-Stevens Point, and Tim Van Dielen, wildlife ecologist at UW-Madison. And joining us now by telephone, we have Adrian Weideven, who is a mammalian ecologist with the Department of Natural Resources. Adrian, thanks so much for joining us on Route 51.
Thanks for having me. Hi, Glenn, and hi, Tim, and Eric.
Hi, Adrian.
Hi, Adrian.
Adrian, I'm going to play another short tape right now. The DNR, as you know, is holding deer management information sessions across Wisconsin, and I happen to attend one of those Tuesday night in Merrill, and there were a lot of frustrated hunters. This is what it was like.
The DNR deer management meeting in Merrill was packed with longtime hunters, many disappointed with the last gun deer season. People like Dave Wedler of Gleason.
I never shot a shell. It's the first time in all my years of hunting that I've probably not shot a buck. I saw a total of 4 deer in the 9 days.
Tom Kolstad of Irma and Byron Lang of Tomahawk voiced the common concern that too many wolves, bears, and coyotes may be killing off the herd.
Not very many deer. There's an awful lot of predators out there. Any does that you do see going through the woods usually don't have fawns with them.
In our country, we got the wolves. We got the bear. I think that's a big impact up there.
I'm talking about coyotes.
At times, the frustration spilled out in the meeting, targeting federal protection for predators and perceived mismanagement by state authorities.
Where is your state right? This is the state of Wisconsin. We don't have to go out there and listen to feds all the time over our stuff.
At the front of the room, wildlife biologist Rick Whitey took it all in.
and said the DNR is implementing new policies to restore both the size of the herd and the trust of the hunting community.
You know, we'd like to regain some of the credibility and trust that I think has been lost. And I think by showing that, you know, we're interested in building the herd back is going to be helpful with many people, because that's certainly the objective.
According to DNR research, the smaller deer herd can't just be blamed on predators. There's also hunting pressure, too many antlerless permits in past seasons, and a severe winter 3 years ago. In Merrill, I'm Glenn Mobert for Wisconsin Public Radio News. And Adrian Weidevin, these information meetings, the Conservation Congress meetings that are going to be coming up early in April, what will come out of those?
At this point, I guess I'm not sure. Obviously, people are very concerned about the deer herd. My own experience is that although the deer herd is down, I'm spending a lot of time in the field. I guess I certainly wouldn't call it a dwindling deer herd. There certainly are pockets where the deer herd is it's much lower numbers. But in general, deer are still doing quite well across northern Wisconsin. Now, if we compare deer populations to, say, the 1960s and 70s when we had a series of severe winters, we're still well above those kind of numbers.
Tim Van Dielen, you wrote a paper with Christopher Jacques suggesting that earlier years of deer overabundance caused by widespread baiting and feeding, mild winters, and other factors led to some unrealistic harvest expectations. Can you explain that for us?
Well, I think part of the discussion has to be sort of a realistic look at where we've come. We just came through 20 years of hunting success that's as high as it's ever been in Wisconsin, and that coincided with a period of relatively mild winters and certainly a lot of change in the northern forest harvest that has put more deer food on the landscape. And, you know, if you're going to use the best that it's ever been as your frame of reference, that begs the question really on whether that's appropriate. And so, you know, we manage the deer population not to optimize hunter opportunity, although hunter input and hunter desires is very important. I'm an avid deer hunter myself, and you know, I can empathize with folks who report that they didn't see as many deer as they thought they should have. But at the same time, there's a large body of research on deer impacts to the plants that grow on the forest floor, to the regeneration of the trees themselves, to trickle-down effects on other species, birds, small mammals, that sort of thing, that suggests that there is a real cost to having too many deer on the landscape. And what we're struggling right now with is trying to find that sweet spot where everybody's going to be happy. And, you know, again, we have to ask whether or not finding that sweet spot is realistic.
Now, Adrian and Tim, you both wrote a book together called Recovery of Gray Wolves in the Great Lakes Region of the United States. So you're both well briefed on the expanding wolf population. A lot of the hunters that we talk to are blaming the wolves for the smaller deer herd. Your response?
It's probably a logical thing to do. You see one species population increase, and you see another species population that seems to be declining, and it's a logical thing that people would point at as suggesting, especially when the species that's increasing is a predator that's known to kill deer. But sometimes those things can be deceiving. Wolves obviously are an impact, but they're just one of many impacts, and you know, they live in large groups, so you could see tracks of wolves in one place and see them again 10 miles away, so it looks like there's a lot of wolves in the landscape, when it might be the same group of wolves that are covering an area of 40, 50 square miles. So some of it can be sort of deceiving, but certainly wolves are one of the factors that affect the deer herd, but they certainly don't affect it by themselves. There's a whole array of predators out there. There's climatic factors, and the hunters themselves have a major impact on the deer population. So it's a mixture, it's a combination of all those things that affect the size of the deer herd.
Now, at that meeting that I was at in Merrill, Rick Whitey, the wildlife ecologist who I guess he was in the crosshairs for much of that meeting, but he pointed to a study that was done in Upper Michigan of predation that indicated that coyotes were actually more of a problem than wolves or bears in terms of the number of fawns that were being killed.
And that's often the case, that coyotes are an important predator on fawns. There was a similar study done in Minnesota, and in that case, out of 3 years where they're studying fawn mortality, 2 years the bears were the number one predator on fawns, but during the third year, bobcats were an important predator. So it varies across the landscape, and you can't just blame it on any one predator. So it's going to be a mixture of all the predators that have an impact. Plus, the predators impact each other, and if you have a higher wolf population, those areas are probably going to have lower coyote numbers. So there's a bit of a wash there that, yes, coyotes are probably more important predators on fawns, and if you have a higher wolf population, it may reduce some of the coyote abundance.
We now have about 650 wolves. That's a rough estimate compared to your management goal of 350 wolves. Adrian, is it time for us to have a wolf hunting season to bring the population in balance?
Well, the first thing we need to do is get wolves off the federal endangered species list, and we did have them off for a while in 2007-2008 for 2 months in 2009. Unfortunately, they're back on the endangered species list, which gives us very limited, very little flexibility in managing a wolf population. So that's our most critical thing, is to get them off the list and start dealing with wolf depredation problems. Once we have them off the list, hunting is one of the things. A public harvest is one of the things we would want to consider. And would there be places where we want to apply some public harvest to manage a population? That's certainly one of the things we would be looking at. But the most critical thing right now is just to get wolves off the federal endangered species list and return the management to the state. And that's where we're putting most of our emphasis at this time.
Well, they were a state-protected wild animal since 2004. They were removed from the federal endangered list in 2007, then relisted in 2008, then removed in 2009, and then relisted yet again after a lawsuit. I mean, you can't keep track of all of this stuff.
It becomes challenging trying to keep track of all the legalistic statuses of wolves in the state. And it's as frustrating for us working with wolf management as it is to the public, the general public out there. It makes it much more difficult to have acceptance of these predators on the landscape if we can't manage their populations.
And I think it also makes it very clear that this is not a biological issue here. It ping pong balls back and forth between endangered and delisted, not based on the biology of the critter, but more based on the politics.
You know, gentlemen, there's an old French proverb, people always make the wolf more formidable than he is. How formidable a hunter is the wolf? How much can he actually affect a deer population in a real or concrete way?
I'll say a few things, and then Tim can talk about his recent research paper that he's put together. And our estimates are that wolves may kill maybe as many as 20 deer per year per wolf. So a population of about 650 wolves might be killing about 13,000 deer. Now, that would have some impact within the areas that you might be hunting and within the size of a wolf territory, but on a statewide basis, the impact would be pretty minor. So the impacts are going to be more on a much more localized basis. And they're, as I say, just one of many predators that will be affecting a deer herd. And Tim may want to add some additional things.
Yeah, can I just add to that, Adrian, for 1 second? The whole idea, too, of we go from a landscape that didn't have large predators on it before the wolf showed up, and, of course, the deer now with the presence of a large predator on the landscape have changed behaviorally, too. So you may not be seeing deer as often, and that can be a function of deer staying close to the cover or simply that deer are becoming more nocturnal in their attempt to stay less visible from this large predator on the landscape.
Tim Van Dielen?
Well, I want to echo what Eric said, first of all, because that's what they're seeing pretty dramatically with the ungulates in Yellowstone where wolves are returning. But the research that I've been doing on Wisconsin data has been using the registered harvest for different DMUs and the age structure in the harvest of the antlerless animals to try and see if I can come up with some sort of a signal for both human hunters, wolves, and bears. And what you find is that human hunting, the relative amounts of human hunting, have the biggest predictive power for saying whether or not a deer population is growing and how much it's growing in a deer management unit. Now, bears seem to have a bigger influence on the percent fawns that show up in the harvest, so that would suggest something along the lines of bear predation on fawns, which is makes sense given the life history of bears. The wolf effect is really kind of confusing to me because depending on how I do this statistical analysis, I can come up with different answers. And that ambiguity suggests that the actual size of the effect, whether it's going one way or another, is relatively small. It's certainly relatively small when you compare it to the influence that hunting, human hunting, has on the deer population. And I think what's going on here is mostly a numbers game. Wolves are fantastic predators, but there simply is not that many of them relative to the number of deer in Wisconsin.
Adrian, we're going to give you a last comment here before we have to let you go and move on.
I agree with everything Tim is saying there, and certainly that's the case. Wolves are just one of many factors, and when you look at the whole picture, the climatic conditions and hunting harvests are going to have much more of an impact on a deer herd than the wolves themselves will.
And Adrian, as you said in the book that you wrote with Tim Van Dielen, Recovery of Gray Wolves in the Great Lakes Region of the United States, this area is really the only area, specifically Minnesota, where the wolf population never was completely exterminated.
That's true. The Great Lakes has that honor that this is the last place wolves persisted in the lower 48 states, the last population being in the boundary waters of Minnesota. And once that population was given adequate protection, they were able to spread back across Wisconsin and into Michigan. And right now we have the very healthy wolf population as because of that.
Adrian Weideman of the DNR. Adrian, thanks so much for joining us today. And we are going to move on to Rich in Edgar. Rich, you're on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Hello, Rich.
Thanks, Glenn. Thanks to your guest. I'm a deer hunter, but I'm also a forest land owner, and I heard some of the previous comments, so your guest kind of hit on this, reaching this balance between the deer population and all the other interests. But as a forest land owner, you can have lots of deer out there. Several years, quite a few years back, the deer put up these grazing checkers and estimated the population in the area to be something like 20 or 21 per square mile or something like that. It was high. Matter of fact, if the snow was still on, I could look out the window now and probably see 15 or so standing there near my woods. But the forest land owners don't get compensation for what deer do, such as agricultural interests do. You have lots of stakeholders in this. It's not just the hunters. And I think people have been hearing too much just from those people saying, well, I didn't get a deer. And as a deer hunter, I've hunted nearly 45 years, and that's not the only stake in this. There's the suppression of forest regeneration. You got taxpayer money going for agriculture damage. You got municipalities more and more every year trying to do something to handle deer problems. You got deaths on the highway. You have all these stakeholders in this, and I think the emphasis has fallen, or the news has been about the hunter not getting a deer.
Eric?
Yeah, excellent observations. I think I wish more people had that perspective, that it's really about a whole lot of competing needs and desires. And, one of those needs and desires is to keep a healthy deer herd relative to the effect that it can have ecologically on things. So I think your insights are wonderful.
All right, Rich, thanks so much for the phone call. And Bob in Land O'Lakes, hang on. We'll be getting to you right after this break. You're listening to Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Our guests, Tim Van Dielen and Eric Anderson, both wildlife ecologists. We're talking about the state's dwindling deer population, expanding bear population and wolf population, and cougars. We're also taking your phone calls at 261-6371, 1-800-780 9742. Back to the phones to Bob in Land O'Lakes. Bob, you're on Route 51.
How you doing?
Doing well.
I'm a forester. I've been working in Vilas and Oneida counties for over 30 years now. And, people just don't realize what the native population of deer have been. Up until really all through the 60s and 70s, statewide harvest was under 100,000 animals. That's both gun and bull. People just don't remember when their fathers and grandfathers used to go out, and 10 guys used to go out, and only two would come back with a antlered deer. So I can tell you that for the past 20 or more years, we have not been able to regenerate northern hardwoods in northern Wisconsin, at least in these two counties, and I know it's the same in Forest and Iron County, just because the deer pressure on, well, a lot of species, but particularly sugar maple, we have stands that we thinned 20 years ago that are nothing but full of raspberries because the deer have browsed the sugar maple, and sugar maple has never been a preferred browse species until the last two decades.
So you think that's indicative of the fact that maybe we have historically high levels of deer, and maybe the
for the last 20 years,
and maybe the population is getting more in line?
Well, yeah. In fact, what I believe is happening, what I see going on with the wolf population, and the wolves have very little impact in terms of, I think, deer kill. I mean, I think there's more killed in vehicle collisions than what the wolves are taking out. And I know coyotes, they definitely take more, like you indicated. And I know bear take a tremendous amount of cubs. I mean, not cubs, fawns.
Fawns, yeah.
But the thing that I think is happening, because where the wolves have moved in, and you guys have radio collared these guys, so you know their territory. And what we're seeing is that wherever you have home territory of a pack, the deer move out because they're very smart, of course. They move out of those areas, and they're moving into these 1 to 2 mile corridors between the territories. So you have these concentrations of the deer moving into these corridors, and in those home territories of the wolves, the deers move out. So, and I'm for the first time in the last, 2 years ago, we saw wolves move into a forest that I'm really familiar with, that I've been managing for, like I say, a long, long period, and we're finally starting to see some maple regeneration coming into this, and we're definitely seeing signs that wolves are in the area and less sign of the deer. So it's just...
So wolves are a good thing.
Moving the deer out of some of these areas, but it's not necessarily that they're killing them.
Bob,
I still think we have a high population of deer, no question about that.
All right. Bob, thanks so much for the phone call. We've
sure.
got to let you go. We're running out of time.
Sure.
And Tim Van Dielen, your response.
Well, Bob is describing a situation that would be consistent with a lot of current research on wolf impacts on ungulates and then trickle-down impacts on the plants. So, it makes sense to me.
And Eric Anderson?
I think, we can talk about Yellowstone, and it's really the exact same thing happening with the wolves being reestablished there in 95. We've seen an increase in the vegetation along the streams. We've seen beaver returning to areas. We've found songbirds showing up that haven't been there in the last 70 years. So there are all these cascading effects that come from getting a large predator back on the landscape. So I think it's a good thing.
And Tim Van Dielen, where does the DNR go from here? We heard at the deer management meeting this past week that they are taking steps to grow the herd again.
Well, I'm not sure that's accurate. I think the more important thing that we're trying to do, we're backing off a little bit on the harvest intensity, which will enable the deer population to grow. That's different than actively trying to rebuild it. I think the bigger effort is the research that's going to get going to try and make our ability to estimate deer numbers and understand predation impacts a little bit better. So, if I may, I'd like to put a plug out there to the hunters and landowners that we're looking for cooperators in identifying places to do the research. We're going to have one study area likely that'll be in the ag country east of Stevens Point, so we can take advantage of their fantastic student wildlife club there to get some help. But we're also going to be looking in the northwest, so we have a study area where we can understand deer and predator impacts in a northwoods sort of situation. So those are things that I think hunters and landowners are going to be seeing in the near future.
Okay. Thank you so much, Tim Van Dielen. and also Eric Anderson, wildlife ecologists, and also thanks to Adrian Wideven, mammalian ecologist at the Wisconsin DNR. I want to remind you that the book written by Adrian Wideven and Tim Van Dielen, Recovery of Gray Wolves in the Great Lakes Region of the United States, is available from Springer Publishing. A reminder also that the Conservation Congress meetings take place on Monday, April 12th, in each of Wisconsin's 72 counties. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Next Thursday, the subject is the Never Forgotten Honor Flight, a group of local people who are organizing a flight to Washington, D.C. for World War II veterans to give them a chance to see, free of charge, the memorial that has been built in their honor. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Mary Baldwin, John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. That's it for us. Until next week, we're heading out of town.